Is with me tonight, Chuck.
Hi, Eric.
Do you think we can fill up the hour?
I was just going to say, has anything happened since the last time?
I don't even know where to start. I mean, every day, you know, I'm a junkie for this stuff.
Yeah, right.
And I'm getting burned out on it. I don't get burned out on politics. You know, this is just, but it's kind of, even when I avoid the news for a day, my Facebook feed is filled with stuff. And I keep thinking, okay, that's got to be an exaggeration, fake news. And I go, nope, it's real.
Trump's only been in office since January the 20th.
I know.
Eric, so we got a long way to go here. Maybe. I mean, who knows?
Well, who knows? Because there are things happening. And
there are rumblings.
And actions do have consequences. And why don't we start with, has he been effective?
No. And he's introduced no legislation.
None.
He has
zero.
Done nothing but issue executive orders that are not well thought out. And, of course, just a reminder for all of our listeners who I'm sure don't need much reminding on this, but executive orders under President Obama were considered tyranny and unconstitutional.
Yeah,
and
which, by
overreach.
The way, if you go to WikiLeaks and you find executive orders for the past, like, 150 years, you have to go back to Grover Cleveland's first one. If you go by, not by total orders, but average per term, because there are a lot of one-termers out there who did it, Obama actually had the least number of executive orders of
George
any
W. Bush among the most.
Bush did the most. Of course, you know, when World War II, that's when the most of them happened. But still, that was...
That's a little different.
It was a little different, but it was... and so all of the people that were screaming, executive orders, violation of the Constitution, I think there were a lot of people that probably thought executive orders in general were a constitutional violation, and now they're like, oh, we've got a man of action, and that's all he's done is issue executive orders.
Before we get into some of the specifics, could I just make two broad points that I think might help people kind of understand some of this? And you and I have talked about some of this before, but kind of what's going on aside from each of the things that we could list since the election and since the inauguration. Well, I think what's going on here is that what we have is a guy in office, an administration in office, that wants to consolidate power under the executive office only.
Right.
And typically, people who want to do that are a little fearful of any kind of independent power seats outside of their own little bubble, like Sacramento, for example, or Albany, New York, or someplace like that, or the judiciary, or the press. So what you see is this administration trying to discredit the judiciary, the press, Governor Jerry Brown, some folks, the Attorney General of the state of New York. So that's one thing that's going on in broad terms. The second thing that's going on, and if there is a silver lining, it's that so far what has happened that I think is good is that it has rousted the left.
It is.
And it has mobilized and it has re-energized and it has refocused people on the left who now realize the truism that maybe had been forgotten, that the things that we take for granted should not be taken for granted.
Right.
One other quick thing under that little umbrella is that I think that the good news for the Trump administration is only in the short term. In the long term, if you look at polling among millennials, people under 35 specifically, almost two-thirds completely reject the agenda of Donald Trump. So
it's always the question getting them to the polls.
That's exactly it.
That's the big deal. But
the Republican Party is becoming divided.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that. I wonder, why don't we start off? I mean, there's so many places we can start off, but why don't we start off with Affordable Health Care Act?
Right.
All right. We saw a Congress, since it passed in 2010, whenever it was, passed repeals.
56 times, I think.
Something ridiculous. Once every few weeks.
Right.
And you know, Obama was always able to save them from themselves by vetoing it. They have no roadblocks to doing it now. They came in before Trump did.
And said on day one.
And said on day one that they were going to do it. It's not happening.
Hasn't happened. And the reason for that is that, one, they do not have a replacement.
No.
And two, they're hearing from people who may not necessarily love everything about the Affordable Care Act, but they do want it replaced with something. They don't want tens of millions of people put out on the street with no health care and no access.
Now, there are some people who don't realize that ACA is Obamacare.
Right.
We saw a poll on that.
If you poll ACA, people love it. If you poll Obamacare, that's where you find the people on the right don't like it.
Yeah.
And you can draw your own conclusions about why that might be. But they are hearing from people. And even Republicans are a little antsy about this. And so nothing has happened on it. Nothing.
So what happened? This thing passed, 7 years ago?
Right.
Why don't they have a replacement? They've been trying to repeal it forever. What have they been, doing with it?
They have nothing.
Because they can't have anything.
You can even go back further than that. This was implemented in the state of Massachusetts by a Republican governor named Mitt Romney.
Right.
And where did that come from? That came from the Republican-controlled Congress of the 1990s.
Right. Originally began actually with the Hoover Institute.
Who were opposing what Hillary Clinton wanted to do with health care.
It was a conservative alternative.
So the ACA, the whole lineage of the ACA is from the right, not from the left at all.
Yeah, but see, now they're bound. They've got all of their criticisms of ACA have been, well, the premiums are higher, deductibles are higher, I don't get to choose my doctor, I don't, all of the stuff. So now they've got to replace it with something that meets all of those needs because they've set the criteria. And I think they're in a panic. I mean, here's where I was hoping that maybe that there's something beyond what hype in terms of Trump being the rugged individualist. Mm-hmm. I was hoping that he would just lose patience and say, you know what? Single payer. You know, I was hoping that there would be that kind of independence, but I'm not seeing any sign of it. I think he's in over his head.
He could tweet that out. That's short enough to just in all caps, maybe.
I don't know, because that's really the only thing that's going to meet the criteria of the criticisms that they've levied on the system. What are they going to do? Go back to just, they're in a jam.
They are in a jam.
And I think they're in a panic, and they've got no excuses because they've got total power over two branches and maybe soon three.
I've been saying that they do have all three branches because the person he's nominated to fill Antonin Scalia's seat is going to be confirmed. Yeah. Of course, the thing about the Supreme Court is, though, and you would know this better than I do, and if you put your attorney's hat on, you can help me with this. There's a long list of Supreme Court nominees who have come from one side or the other of the political spectrum who, once on the court with a lifetime appointment, may not necessarily adhere to the spectrum they came from on every case.
Maybe. I don't know that that's going to work for him. Souter is one of those that we're talking about. He was Bush's. He was Sununu vouched for him because all of his decisions had been conservative in New Hampshire. When he finally got off the Supreme Court and he was asked about that, he said, well, how come your decisions were all conservative when you were in the New Hampshire courts and they all became more liberal when you reached the Supreme Court? He said, because New Hampshire law is conservative. I was upholding
New Hampshire law.
Yeah. And he just, so he was sort of stealth. There were hints in his confirmation hearings. I remember some law professors, I was in law school at the time, bringing him up, and I don't want to get into that sidetrack, but I don't know that he will necessarily moderate, although maybe he's got some of the Scalia libertarianist stuff that might help him with some of the search issues. I don't know. We'll see. Scalia was supposedly getting better on search issues as he got older. We'll see. But what has happened in the past when courts is actually people who were conservative who are already on the court tend to move. Like Blackmun, once Marshall and Brennan were off the court, there was nobody left who opposed the death penalty on principle. And then all of a sudden, in 1992, I think it was, Blackmun announced, I oppose the death penalty. He stepped up for that. Now, Blackmun had been pretty liberal. He was a Nixon appointee, and he'd been pretty liberal for most of his term. He came in and had a couple of conservative things. Once you're on the Supreme Court, you don't have to, you're not bound anybody. No. You're not going anywhere unless you're going to run for president, right?
No, so that's exactly.
So it. They listen to intelligent argument day in and day out. They're exposed to ideas, and so they can get in. They can actually move. Brennan, who was probably the most liberal person on our court, maybe even more liberal than Marshall in some ways, was an Eisenhower appointee. Who was the woman that Reagan appointed? Sandra Day O'Connor.
Sandra Day O'Connor.
She
the first
started
woman
to move that way. She preserved abortion rights when they thought they finally had their majority. She actually voted to preserve abortion rights. So maybe Kennedy, who is always considered a swing vote, I think that's been exaggerated. He usually votes conservative. maybe, you know, there's some kind of hope there. If he sort of says, you know what, this is kind of, we're moving into crazy times here.
And, he is a Californian.
Yeah, well, there you
there
go.
There you go. There, so mean, there's hope.
Yeah, so we'll see.
Big defeat for the, speaking of the courts, a big defeat from the Ninth Circuit for the president today.
Huge.
Travel ban.
And he was tweeting earlier complaining he didn't like what he heard on Tuesday afternoon.
Right. I called it disgraceful.
Disgraceful.
That there would be an argument before a court.
Well, and that the judges were interrupting his attorneys and, you know.
And asking questions.
And asking questions.
Imagine that.
I know. And then it happened, and he says, "I'll see you in court." It's like you're already
in all caps on Twitter,
no.
Right?
Yes, that and the effect of that is the temporary restraining order. We're not even into the hearing yet, the evidentiary hearing. The temporary restraining order has been upheld. They tried to get it overturned
from Seattle,
twice,
right.
From Seattle, yeah. From a judge who's a very interesting judge. I've been reading up about
appointed by George W. Bush.
Yes, I know, right. But. But who cited in one of his decisions Black Lives Matter. So yeah. So he may be another one of those Souter Brennan types. We don't know.
One more little piece of news that kind of flew under the radar because it happened very late today. Mm-hmm. I haven't checked recently. I should ask my phone. But Congressman Gerald Nadler, who's a Democrat from New York,
yes,
in the U.S. House of Representatives, filed articles of inquiry today. Nothing has been filed since the mid-90s against Bill Clinton. Articles of inquiry are the first step toward impeachment. Now, that's not going to happen. He's
right.
A Democrat. So, but it has to do with conflict of business interest, his entanglements overseas with Russia,
yeah.
And on and on and on.
Yeah.
So that the House Judiciary Committee is going to have to respond to that within a couple of weeks, 14 legislative days, I think it is.
And we know what that's
going to be. But the cracks are starting to appear, even on the Republican side, even though this was a Democratic move. Even on the Republican side, the cracks are beginning to appear. Just today, Jason Chaffetz from Utah made a big splash about what Kellyanne Conway had done on television today,
yes.
in advocating that people go buy Ivanka Trump's apparel line, which
right.
is plainly illegal.
It was in response to Nordstrom discontinuing the line.
Right.
Probably a business decision. We don't know why, but they cited that sales were off,
yep.
Either due to whether or not it was due to the product being mediocre or maybe political consumers. We don't know.
But it's an American company that was attacked by the president of the United States.
States, right. In a Twitter, right, tweet. And that itself is a conflict of interest because that
is
using his state power,
yep.
to influence a business decision, and then for Kellyanne Conway to come on and say, well, everybody should go buy
the
product
online.
And even Spicer kind of admitted by saying she's been counseled.
She was counseled, and that's all we'll say about it.
Right.
Yeah,
just,
what does that mean? She's a lawyer, by the way.
Yeah.
If anybody should know.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
And that's not the only conflict of interest. I mean, there is an ocean of stuff that's
yeah.
waiting to come in, but we knew that. We knew it. Right. Everybody knew. It was like, what is he doing? Why isn't he making these changes to set right. up blind trust? Why isn't he selling off interest? And there was a development in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Right, with regard to a company,
Donald that, Jr.
Yeah. Right, owned by Donald Jr. And the previous company had been owned by it. So he said the previous company involving some type of cleanup site.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was soon a Superfund, but it's a polluted site. And he was trying to get the taxpayers of South Carolina to do it
to do
based
the
on the fact that
right.
he didn't have any connections with that company. That
even
was
though
owned
his,
by
son
his son
owns it, yeah,
son
right.
and South Carolina. You know, these mid-level government officials, they said no.
They stood up to him.
Taxpayers aren't going to do it. But they shouldn't even be in that position.
No.
I mean, these guys who are, you know, on, like I said, mid-level government, having to defy a president,
right.
you know, the most powerful man in the world, and in a climate in South Carolina where they're probably going to get death threats and everything mm-hmm. for it. This is exactly why you do not, you do that separation and you stay out of it. And on top of it, his lawyer apparently lied to the media back in December saying South Carolina had already approved it. It was completely false.
Yeah.
And, I, you know, so it's just, I... I'm astounded. It's overwhelming. There's a meme going around, you know, with George Bush saying "Miss me," you know, I mean, which was, of course, would have been a meme. You know, Reagan with Nixon saying "Miss me."
I was going to say people are even missing Richard Nixon. Watergate seems like child's play now.
This is going to get really nasty,
ugly. Well, it almost already has. I mean, he rolled out maybe the worst collection of cabinet appointees ever. People who did not even have any idea what the agencies did.
Yeah.
Rick Perry had no idea that our nuclear arsenal falls under the Department of Energy. He thought he was just going to be a spokesman for oil and gas companies.
Remember, he couldn't even name the Department of Energy
as one of
the departments he wanted to nix when he was running for president for. Years ago. It's really
DeVos under questioning the office of Secretary of Education was unfamiliar with education policy A to Z.
Couldn't even answer it, you know, but at least we'll be safe from grizzly bears, right?
We will.
or the kids will.
She also favors arming people in schools.
You're listening to KHSU. This is Thursday Night Talk. My guest is Chuck Rogers. We are talking the first two, or maybe we're on, no, 2 weeks, or is it 3 weeks? I think we're 3 weeks.
It's not 3 years?
And we're just talking about the deluge we don't even know where to begin. But
One thing that really got on my nerves, and it's just been a couple of days, yesterday? Elizabeth Warren rose to speak in opposition to Jeff Sessions' nomination to be Attorney General. And she read into the record something that was already in the U.S. Senate record from the 1980s. She read a letter aloud written by Coretta Scott King, of course, the widow of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., when Jeff Sessions had been nominated for a federal judgeship in the 1980s. And Coretta Scott King wrote a letter to the committee, to the Judiciary Committee, opposing his nomination then, and cited all kinds of reasons for it, from the time when he had been Attorney General of Alabama and U.S. Attorney in Alabama. So Elizabeth Warren was simply rereading that letter back into the record and was shut up by Mitch McConnell.
And when we say shut up, there's obscure rules.
Rule 19.
Out. Yeah.
That she was demeaning another senator.
Right.
What she was doing was opposing a cabinet nominee.
Right.
So that 19 didn't apply.
A letter that is actually already part of the congressional record from the time when he,
that's
in
right.
1986, when he was too racist.
For that letter to be admitted then.
Yeah. And
not now.
Right.
So just think about this. Think about this for a second. Here you have a female senator being silenced by an old male senator during Black History Month, while she's reading a letter from Coretta Scott King, the widow of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Right.
Tell me about optics for that.
I know. And then four men read it after.
Exactly.
They
read it.
Right. To be fair, it might be that they were afraid that they were going to have to exclude the whole Democratic contingent, and so they got cowardly. So the question is, was it misogyny or cowardice? Maybe both.
I don't know. Some people are saying that Mitch McConnell was even clever enough to do this because he wants Elizabeth Warren to be the face of the Democratic Party going into the 2018 elections. And yes, Mitch McConnell is a clever politician, but I don't think he would even go that far.
All right, we have a caller, but before we take the call, I want to give other people a chance as well. Phone number, if you would like to join this discussion, we are talking the first three weeks of President Trump, 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. If you're out of the area, that's 826-4805 or 800-640-5911. Richard, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted you're talking about how fast things are moving and how overwhelming it seems. So while you've been on the air, the Washington Post just announced that the National Security Advisor Flynn is now saying that he discussed sanctions with the Russian ambassador despite his earlier denials.
Oh.
And this was a month before Trump came into office. He's backed away from the statement today that he was asked about yesterday. And so evidently it looks like he's headed toward a possible, this is treason.
Well, I was just gonna ask Richard. It's only been 19 minutes since we're on the air, so, so now we already have other things to talk about. Are you? I'm not looking at the Post article. Are you saying that the Post article suggests that Flynn was talking to the Russians about if elected and if he had some influence with the newly elected President Trump that he would advocate for the lifting of the sanctions on the Russians?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yes, they've been doing an investigation, and as the investigation has gotten tighter and tighter, Flynn has found himself having to walk back his statements. That he's now saying he doesn't remember if they really ever discussed any kind of possible.
He doesn't remember sanctions.
Yeah. He doesn't remember at this point. Yeah.
Well, that brought that back into the headlines because there was a lament that controversy had been lost. You know that there, but you know that's going to keep coming back.
It was announced at 9:26 p.m.
Hey, Richard, call us back in another 19 minutes and tell us what's in.
Yeah, right. I just said I'd add to the pile. Okay.
Right.
Rachel Maddow is on it. She interrupts her feed with breaking news, and then she'll probably have something later on tonight as it comes to.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure.
A major one coming up again. Here we go. All right.
Wow. Hey. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Yeah, do you remember when, you know, ties to Russia used to be like something that was hit of left-wing stuff? Remember those days?
The left-wing used to be accused of being close to Russia used to be anathema on the right. It used to be something that if that were discovered, you didn't have a chance in right-wing politics.
I know.
Here's the thing. Part of that Republican Party still exists, part of that Republican Party still exists in the United States Senate.
Yeah.
John McCain and Lindsey Graham, for example, and McCain has been, you know, to his credit, he has been standing up to Trump.
Yeah.
Of course, Trump is the one who said that he was not a hero. So I don't know if there's anything personal there, but McCain and hopefully General Mattis, we'll see.
I also don't want to, you know, sometimes you push back real hard on stuff, and I don't want to have the left push back on this and then all of a sudden renew a Cold War with Russia either. You know, I think we got to kind of be careful in this and not get too much into the Cold War thing. I mean, and not be too eager to ally with the hawks that don't like Trump for this reason.
Russia has been tricky going all the way back to the end of World War II.
It is. We got to be really nuanced about it. Russia, their people are just disappearing.
The economy, there's all kinds of trash, problems
with it. But that, you know, that is kind of their business to a certain degree. But it is kind of interesting. I mean, there's all kinds of theories that they've got something. That was the BuzzFeed thing on Trump. Because as Stephen Colbert said a couple of weeks ago, I will be convinced if Trump says one thing that annoys Putin.
And he doesn't. He continues to defend him, which goes against all logic in politics. And that's the reason why that question is still out there. What do they have on him?
Yeah.
And we don't know yet.
We don't know. I don't know. Maybe he just really likes the whole strongman concept.
I think he does like that, but I think there's something else that I'm hoping that some investigative reporters are all over, and I'm sure they are, and I'm waiting for this story.
Oh, I think so.
And it has to do with the fact that, and I'll make it short here. It has to do with the fact that Trump is known in this country as the king of debt. He gets loans for his big projects with no intent of paying it all back. Then he negotiates downward so that he saves money and makes money in the end. A lot of U.S. banks have stopped loaning to him many years ago.
Yeah.
And so he's been getting loans from banks overseas. And the question is that what Russia has on it? Does he have some loans from some Russian financial institution or some oligarch, a financial oligarch in Russia? And Putin is protecting him and saying, as long as you play my game, I'll make sure that debt goes away. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't have any evidence of that, but I know that there are very good reporters who are working on that.
Well, as we go through this, you know, we talk about the winners and losers of, you know, all the political events, and I think it's safe to say that one of the institutions that has benefited from a Trump presidency is Saturday Night Live, which, you know, I haven't really gone to watch that much since they canned the original cast in 1981 in order to abandon the countercultural thing and mainstream it. I haven't really liked it all that much since then.
It's gone through good and bad eras since then. Yeah, right.
I mean, but it's what was it? Melissa McCarthy
did doing Sean Spicer,
and of course, yeah, did Sean Spicer did it? It was hilarious, and apparently, the could I see that again, Michael? Sorry. Okay, thanks. We'll take that in just a minute. The big objection in the White House is that he was portrayed by a woman.
By a woman.
That may put him in jeopardy.
Right. Exactly.
Because he looks weak.
Because he was portrayed by a woman. So maybe now, who knows, maybe a lot of the women in the Saturday Night Live cast will get to portray a lot of the Trump administration. Who knows? We'll see.
Maybe Trump himself. I mean, so far we only had Meryl Streep in that play.
Right.
But, you know, where's Lily Tomlin? Come on.
I don't know. I did read a quote from Alec Baldwin today, who obviously is the one who portrays Trump a lot on SNL, who said that the next few Saturday Night Lives will be fantastic, maybe even historic.
Maybe huge. All right. Why don't we take Honore in Samoa? You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just wondering why the press is not discussing the elephant in the room at all.
Which one?
That I've heard. that the ban doesn't include countries that actually had terrorists.
That's been covered a lot. The seven countries that are in the ban do not include anybody from Saudi Arabia, for example, which is where most of the 9/11 attackers came from. Yeah, that has been covered. There's a lot of noise out there, so there's a lot to read. But there are people who have covered that. The Trump's administration's response to that, weak as it is, has been the following: that the seven countries included in the ban were identified by previous administrations, including the Obama administration, as being places of refuge and training for future terrorists. So that's been their justification. Now, critics have said and have raised the prospect that Trump has a lot of investments in places like Saudi Arabia, and so he does not want travelers banned from Saudi Arabia. But who knows? Again, that's another story that's still ongoing. But you're perceptive to notice that for sure.
Yeah, of course, that goes back to the very day that 9/11 happened. Saudis weren't even on
we invaded Iraq.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And Saudis weren't even on the no-fly list. They were exempted from it the day of 9/11.
Right.
I mean, it was just... Well, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, maybe you've heard it on the media. I've been listening really hard for someone to bring it up, and I have not heard it. And to me, it's reminiscent of when we went to war, when we invaded Iraq, and people believing that was somehow connected to 9/11.
Yeah.
It just feels like this jump in logic that they want people to make. And I feel like the media is really letting us down and not addressing this obvious hypocrisy.
Well, it's out there.
It's there, but you're right. Maybe it's not. If you're not hearing it, then it's not doing its job enough. Right. I mean, we're kind of junkies, so we will find it and we'll see it. But if it's not getting to you, then it's probably not getting to a lot of other people too. So
here's the other thing about that, Honore.
It seems like a question that's being deliberately ignored.
No, it's not being deliberately ignored. It's being debated a lot. But here's maybe one explanation for you that'll make you feel a little better about it. There's so much that happens every single day with this administration that somebody in the press covers a story like Saudi Arabia being left out of the ban, for example, there's something wholly new to cover the next day that is at least as big. So it's what we have is a chaotic administration, and actually I think Trump likes chaos, and so there are things to cover every day that take huge amounts of staff. In fact, here's something else else that might be interested to you, since you're interested in the business of the media, places like the New York Times, who have not increased their staff levels in decades, are now hiring. National Public Radio, which has not increased new staff in decades, is hiring. The Washington Post is increasing staff. They're opening new bureaus that have been closed for years and years and years. So there is a lot going on. It's just that there's a lot to keep up with right now.
And let me bring up something to you. This might make you also feel a little better. Have you heard about the Bowling Green Massacre?
Yeah.
Well, you know how she got into that trouble. Well, she was responding to questions about the fact that people from those countries have not, nobody from that country has been, you know, caught in any terror act. She referred to the Bowling Green Massacre. She got it totally wrong. Somebody obviously sent her a memo. It was Bowling Green was where the location of two Iraqi immigrants who were caught up in some gun running. There was no massacre. That was obviously total, you know, and she repeated it three times after, you know, claiming the media. But that was, that happened. She got into that trouble because she was being pressed on that question.
Yeah.
So it just is one indication there. Of course, there's a folk song about the Bowling Green Massacre. Now, if you go ahead, Google folk song Bowling Green Massacre if you want a great laugh.
Yeah, I've heard that on the media. I just feel really disappointed. And this one question that straddles both his conflict of interest business-wise and his ban.
Well, I think the conflict of interest thing, I think that's kind of simmering. I think that's going to come out. It's actually coming out now, the whole Nordstrom thing, South Carolina, and there's going to be issues now with hotels that are brewing. I think there's some people that are just like saying, you know what, let's just wait till we have a whole bunch of stuff and hit it at once. It's going to be huge. Now I'm sounding like somebody we know.
And I hope the media does a lot better job than they did, you know, after 9/11, that's for sure.
I hear you. All right. Thank you, Andre. Listen, you're listening to KHSU. This is Thursday Night Talk. My name is Eric Kirk. My guest is Chuck Rogers. We are talking Trump. The phone number, if you want to join the conversation, 826-4805, 1-800-640-5911. We're no way we're even going to put a dent in everything that's happened over the past 3 weeks. But let's give Maureen of Arcata a chance to join and add hers.
Oh, well, I only hope I can.
Give it a try.
Yeah. I only hope I can. I'm getting in it here, but Chuck.
Yes.
Trump likes chaos?
Pardon me?
I heard you say that Trump likes
chaos, yeah.
Well, do we?
How much time yet? I think we don't want chaos in the executive branch of the government for a whole host of reasons that we could go on for hours about, not the least of which is our relationship with foreign governments and with regard to the economy and the judiciary and trade and so on and so forth. But I think if you look back at his the way he has run some of his businesses, the reports I've been reading at least suggest that his management style is actually to do somewhat of what he's done in the Oval Office, and that is to set up advisors who are actually in opposition to each other and play one off against the other until he gets to a good idea, then he jettisons the other guy. So he's got Steve Bannon and Reince Priebus right now.
Stop. He is insane.
Well,
that man that we've allowed, that we have allowed, because that's how insane we are, is insane. And he's in there directing us on our world.
Right.
So it's up to us. It's not about him. He is absolutely insane. We've had other leaders, Hitler, you know, good example. But all these leaders who we have allowed, it's our responsibility to get him the heck out of there.
Well, hopefully.
Don't let anybody who's insane in there again. Like, I don't even want anybody in there telling me what to do because they haven't told me anything I wanted to hear.
I agree. Right. And you know what? He ran for office starting in 2015, and there should have been enough hints that, I take it that you didn't vote for him. I didn't vote for him either, but he won the election, and he's what we have until the Republican-led Congress does something about it.
They probably will. Let's hope they do.
I think it's up to us getting out on the street.
We haven't talked about that yet.
It really has happened. I mean, the airport protest, that was really heartening to see.
That really heartens me. And because it's always been about that, as far as I can see. And, like, I want other people to call in. And, but that's my, that's where I've been for a very, very long time is out on the street wanting everybody else to be shoulder to shoulder because we are all on the same side.
Well, if you want some good news, Maureen, this weekend there may be even more protests. We'll see.
I mean, thank you, Maureen. Listen,
okay, bye.
I really, before we take the next caller, I want to, say that what I really appreciated when the airport protests broke up is that was over a really human issue. I mean, sometimes there's a lot of abstractions and not a lot of clarity in the message and the rest. But here we had human beings in these airports being mistreated, 5-year-old being handcuffed. And I mean, and there's like that famous, that one that went viral of that Muslim family who had been interned coming out to a gauntlet of cheering protesters. And you see those two kids walking down. I mean, if you want to fight against radicalism, that think of the impression on those two kids that have been made, especially if they knew English and could understand the chant, let them in, the rest. I mean, that is a real basic moment where people were really protesting for a human moment.
Yep, absolutely. I know we need to take another call, but just real quickly, interesting you mentioned that because from the area of journalism, one of the other sides of my life, that there is a concept called peopleizing a story. Peopleizing a story, which means if you can show how something has affected or impacted an individual person or a family or a small group so that people can get their arms around that story rather than something that is generalized so that it's hard to understand, then it gets to people. It gets to people and they understand it, and then action can be taken. And I think that's what happened with the airport protests for sure.
Yeah. All right, let's take Michael in Crescent City. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit, and I'd like to hear you folks talk a little bit more about somebody that really troubles me, and that's Steve Bannon, with his connections to the Vatican, his history of he just frightens me that he has such control over our president's ear. So can you talk about that a bit?
Well, Steve Bannon, I don't know how strong his influence is in the Vatican these days, but of course, he's one of these people that starting with Trump and a number of other people who are being appointed and going through these hearings, we have all of these people who were in divorce proceedings with their wives who under oath said these things that they're recanting. And one of them was Steve Bannon, actually, and she hasn't recanted, was that he made reference to not wanting his girls to go to a school with a bunch of whiny brat Jews and the rest. So we're talking about a guy who's just raw alt-right, which we're really shouldn't be saying. We should be saying white supremacists or white nationalists at minimum, the rest. And he is got an influence in there. Now, of course, we've got this whole question as to whether or not he has to be appointed to make it onto the council.
Well, there was an executive order that supposedly he wrote, Trump didn't even read, but signed, which put him on to the National Security Council, right?
Yeah.
So to the exclusion of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, And some of the other folks who should be there. So that's a problem. Yeah, and of course, you know, Steve Bannon comes from the Breitbart world that until Trump's election had been considered kind of a fringe of,
right.
of the far right, and now has, it's the tail wagging the dog, now has taken over the Republican politics.
Yeah. Now, they also...
So, yeah, it's scary.
And he's sort of like the mainstream face right now, mainstream just because he's in the presidency of this really weird trend. And again, what they're calling alt-right online, tied in with the 4chan, all kinds of memes in the 4chan, and a little bit up until Reddit, although it looks like Reddit is kind of clamping down on it, of the spread of trolling on the internet, and the problem is that they're all very clever at how they're doing this and whipping up and creating a frenzy that may have helped Trump actually get elected, and we're seeing some protests. This Milo, I don't even know how to say his last
down
name,
at Berkeley.
Berkeley, and leading to violent. You know, protests against him, and Bannon is tied in with that. Is probably Trump's direct connection into
absolutely.
This really unsavory.
Well, and you know, Michael makes a good point. Another thing is, it could have been Bannon who wrote the statement about Holocaust Remembrance Day left out any mention of Jewish people.
Right. Yes. Right. No, I know. It's
6 million.
I know. Yeah. Well,
Jewish
because
people?
There were others. Yeah. But but half of them were Jewish. Half of the 12 million killed in death camps were Jewish.
Right.
It warrants a mention. I know. It's just. It's.
Don't
ridiculous.
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean. You know,
good
I mean,
point.
We're talking turning that into an all lives matter thing. You know.
Yeah, right. Right.
So. Steve Bannon is a scary guy.
Yeah.
And the real question is exactly how much influence does he have over policy? And how much influence does he have over what comes out of Donald Trump's mouth and what goes onto Donald Trump's Twitter feed?
I think he's the consigliere.
Well, isn't he kind of one of the main key people writing the executive orders?
We think so.
We think so.
They haven't written any legislation yet. I'm waiting to see that, but that requires paragraphs and you know, and a little bit of grammar. But
the thing is, Michael, the position that Steve Bannon is in does not require any kind of Senate approval or confirmation.
Yeah.
The one he's in now.
Question as to whether or not getting onto the security thing.
Exactly.
We haven't.
But just being an advisor to the president does not require. Senate confirmation. So there's not a whole lot anybody can do about it unless he does something that is so untoward that Congress decides to go after him or some legal counsel decides to go after him. So we'll see.
Contempt or something. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks for the call.
All right. We have another Mike in Crescent City. Lots of mics up there. You're on the air.
Hi. Mr. Trump is obviously a megalomaniac. You know, I think his objective from the beginning was to get into the history books. And I think he fully intends to be impeached. And he wants to be the first removed. You know, Nixon can't even say that. He resigned. I'm just wondering what you guys think of the prospect of a President Pence, what we can expect from him with a Congress and a Senate, Senate and a Supreme Court.
Well,
I'll take your comments.
You know, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Somebody, thanks for the call. So I was talking to a very good friend of mine today who we were talking about this very thing, and I remarked to him. I said, if Trump is impeached, we get Mike Pence. And he said, yeah, but you know what? The devil you know is better than the devil that you don't know. And so,
which one do we know?
We know that Pence is a far right Republican, but he doesn't seem to be somebody who wants to blow up the world.
Yeah.
So at least there's that.
I was kind of hoping, and this is where, you know, I was kind of hoping there was, again, something to that independence. I mean, he attacked Bush on the Iraqi invasion on 9/11. It was on his watch. You know, he actually had some remarks about, well, Planned Parenthood does some good.
Right.
And the rest, and it seems like, you know, he's defiant against everybody except for the people that, you know, are...
Well, yeah, you know what? I think Trump does not have any real set out, well thought of, principled kind of policy philosophy for public policy. I don't think there's anything like that in Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump is about validating Donald Trump's self-worth and elevating his own self-esteem, and being president of the United States looks good on the resume.
Yeah,
I don't think he wants to be president. Yeah, I don't think he has any interest in it. He doesn't even like to read. He doesn't even want his daily press brief, his daily presidential intelligence briefing to be more than a page or two.
No.
So this is a guy who's not really interested in public policy. He's not interested in being the chief executive of the country. He wants Donald Trump's name on that resume line that says President of the United States of America, and somebody else do all the details. Thank you very much.
Right. So. Yeah,
that's who he is.
But see, when we had Reagan, Reagan delegated everything, right? He didn't come up with policy. He didn't know what he was signing on. He didn't understand Reaganomics, you know, and the rest. But he was an inspiring speaker.
Right.
He, you know, he was the father and stuff like that. We don't have an inspiring speaker. What do we have? We got anger. We got raw anger. And, you know, and I understand why a lot of people, you know, voted for him. I get that. I get that, you know, that that they feel like that there's a sort of entrenchment as we're just kind of slowly sliding and losing jobs because of the, either because of the trade agreements, or maybe the trade agreements are a symptom rather than a cause of just of the globalization, of the mechanization, of the changes in society that are happening. But I just hope that there was a little bit more depth there. I was hoping that, you know, every once in a while somebody says something that surprises you. Reagan started out as a liberal, right? You know,
he was a Democrat.
He was a New Deal.
He famously said that the Democratic Party left him.
Right. Yeah. So, well, yeah. As he was turning in all his buddies during the McCarthy era,
exactly.
You know, that he met in the National Lawyers Guild, the Actors Guild. But there was some gravitas there. You know, there was some statesmanship, some concept of it.
Worked in government. He had been a governor.
Right. Yeah.
Trump's done nothing.
We don't, you know, and we're just, and I think we're in trouble because I don't see that much has happened. And I think gradually it's going to fall apart. And I'm really, that actually is really scary to me.
It's like a game of Jenga and you're pulling things apart. When is it going to fall?
And he doesn't, he doesn't seem to be effective. There's been no legislation brought.
No.
You know, nothing introduced, certainly nothing on ACA. He's waiting for some Republican to come up with something to replace ACA. He didn't really talk much about what his agenda was going to be in terms of legislation. I don't think he quite gets that he's supposed to show leadership in that part. And his people that he's surrounding himself up. Well, first of all, he attacked Clinton and Cruz on their connections to Goldman Sachs. He brought in, what, six Goldman Sachs people?
Yeah.
Steve
Bannon has ties to Goldman Sachs.
Goldman Sachs. Right. And these aren't legislatures. So he's bringing it great. I think this is going to sour people on the whole concept of outsiders if it doesn't pull back. You know, we always have this notion that I'm an outsider. I'm not a Washington insider. It's bad to be a Washington insider. Well, you know, we may learn a real hard lesson in this country that people have to know how to govern, and know how to govern, you got to at least have some insiders in there that know what they're doing and aren't governed strictly by an ideological agenda. Right. And he surrounded himself with people who do. Phone number 826-4805, 1-800-640-5911. I don't even want to be anti-Trump this much. I really was like, you know, thinking I was going to be like coming up with some silver lining, something that some kind of bone, some type of moment of unity that we could say, well, you know, maybe it's not going to be that bad. But I am really scared by what I'm seeing.
I am too. And I keep saying that the silver lining is that the left has been energized and that millennials are now paying attention and do not like what they're hearing. So I think for the long term, things still look okay.
Yeah. Yeah. If if things don't completely fall apart during this time. He isn't governing, and we're getting leaks that from people on the inside that are saying that he doesn't know what he's doing, that he's in over his head, that he's flailing, and you've got agencies that now have secret rebellions that they're doing that. We haven't seen any of those Twitters for a week.
Well, and the number of leaks that are coming out of there is just unprecedented, and some people think it's even the fact that that's the only way they can communicate with him, because all he does all day is sit around and watch cable news.
Sydney in Crescent City. We're getting a lot of calls from Crescent City tonight. Welcome to the show.
Yes, wonderful to hear the two of you discuss these matters. Only half the electorate, as I understand, came out to vote. So Trump was elected by about 25% of the elected, the voters.
Right.
So the fact that only half the electorate came out to vote says, to me, voter suppression, and that the Koch brothers' agenda for the last 20 years has worked. And I'm hoping maybe the two of you could pick that up. Discuss a little bit.
We can talk a little bit about it. It definitely was. It appears to have been a factor in this election, certainly in North Carolina and Florida. Mm-hmm. It is, and when we're talking about suppression, there's so many different levels of it. There's just everything from rules of even just registering that are cumbersome for people, and everybody says, well, it's easy to get an ID. Sort of is, but there is a definite cultural ability to understand the bureaucracy and get things done.
Yeah, there's even, that's a very good question. There's even, if you go and look at congressional maps, which you can Google, in the state of Alabama, there's one congressional district where the state closed, I believe it was 2/3 of the voting precincts last summer before the election, so that lines would be intentionally long, and it would cause people to have to travel a long distance just to vote, which would take a lot of time. And people who have to work on a Tuesday can't get there. So you bring up a good point. However, voter suppression alone does not account for half the people not voting.
Right.
We also need to make the point that there are too many people in this country who don't care enough to even register to vote and to go to vote. And what I'm hoping is that when we get somebody like Donald Trump in office, maybe some people will wake up and say, you know what, I need to get registered and I need to vote. You can even vote by mail now. Yeah. So you don't even have to go to the polls anymore.
There's early polling in most states. It is true. And yes, we saw those long lines. We saw them in Pennsylvania. Yep. We saw them. But people were inspired by them because it shows how many people are interested in voting. But you got to understand that's bad news for progressives usually.
Oh, absolutely.
Or for turnout when you see those big lines, because for as many people as you see in the line, there are people that are driving by saying, I don't have time to wait in that.
Exactly. And that brings up another good point. This is a good call. It's a good question. Something I've advocated for a long time. And I hope maybe someday, we will change from voting on Tuesdays to voting on Saturdays. The reason we vote on Tuesdays goes all the way back to the 1800s, when it took people in their horse and buggy a whole day or two to get after Sunday dinner to get to wherever it was that the town is that they were going to vote in. Well, we don't do that anymore. And it's difficult for some people to get off of work on a Tuesday to stand in line for 4 hours to cast a vote. So vote by mail is good. That's great. But we could also move our voting day to a Saturday so that more people could actually go to the polls in person and
more
vote.
Early voting. You know, it's just there are certain political figures that have opposed early voting. Like, well, that just brings out, more people. It is actively suppressing. And we aren't even getting into the gerrymandering.
Which is supposedly illegal.
Yeah,
right?
But it's done. And both parties, but more by one party than the other, and more cleverly by one party than the other.
Right, and more in a more sinister way. Yeah. Right.
All right, anybody want to get in at the last minute? Phone number 826-4805, 1-800-640-5911. That's 826-405-800-640-5911. Chuck Rogers is my guest. This is Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. We are discussing Trump, and we've got like maybe a little more than 7 minutes left. And we've barely touched on
Something that's very interesting is how quiet Paul Ryan has been recently.
Oh, yeah.
For those who don't know, he's the Speaker of the House of Representatives, one of the, other than the President, the most important Republican in the country, I guess also the Senate Majority Leader. But Paul Ryan has been very quiet recently, and that's not his usual method of operation.
I've thought about that. Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure what's going on there. I've been looking for some reporting on that. Then there is some of it, and some of it goes to the fact that he's working behind the scenes on a replacement for Obamacare. I'm sure that's probably true, but he's been working on that for a long time.
Yeah.
And he's also a budget guy who is completely opposed to a lot of the things that Trump wants to do because it's going to be too expensive. So I would say looking forward down the line, maybe look for a real clash between Paul Ryan and the White House. We'll see if that happens. I don't know.
All right. Well, we have Mitch in Crescent City. I think we're getting the whole delegation of Crescent City tonight. Mitch, you're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen. I brought this question up on Thursday Night Talk a couple of months ago, and I still don't have an answer to it. According to the last count, Mr. Trump won the presidency with less votes than the last two Republican nominees got in losing. So basically, underneath the title of just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean they're not out there. What is going on with
the Electoral College?
The Electoral College. I mean, yeah. What is it? 2.8 million votes.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by almost 3 million votes, yeah. And actually George W. Bush got fewer votes than Al Gore, and this is not new. And recently, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg actually made a comment that she thinks it's time for the Electoral College to go away.
Oh, that's
so that's big. Yeah, what it comes down to, the guy in Crescent City there, is that we don't elect the president via popular vote. We elect the president state by state by state by state, and Trump won the most states, only by about 88,000 votes, though. In the
right.
Yeah. So.
Well, gentlemen, my point is this: is that I have a problem with the total vote counts as far as how many people actually voted in the United States in this last election compared to the previous two, because what I'm saying is Trump won with less votes than either one of those other Republican nominees got in their losing causes.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. In other words, there had to be millions upon millions of people that did not vote.
There were.
Well, there were. There were a lot of people that were not inspired by this election.
California was record-setting in California.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in other words,
people need to go vote. People need to register. People need to vote. I know.
Trump did not have a mandate of the American people.
No, he does not have a mandate.
All right, Mitch, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you very much.
We're going to try to take one more call. Gene in Eureka, you're on the air, and we're going to have to be really quick with you.
Regarding Paul Ryan, apparently Bannon has a Bannon of his own named Julia Hahn. I got this from the New Yorker, and she is taking after Ryan big time, calling him a third world migration enthusiast and a double agent. It's possible that Bannon's hiring of her is a way of putting Paul Ryan on notice. So that's possibly why he's quiet also. So it's dissension within the ranks, as you mentioned before. And I think the Democrats, the progressives, all of us have to start thinking much more strategically than we are. But everybody's still trying to get their act together and figure out.
Oh, boy. What a great point. Yes. We need to organize locally, countywide and statewide, just the way the Tea Party did.
We need to be calling Congress people that are not our own, because our own are okay.
But, yeah, they're doing fine.
Put the pressure on Jeff Flake, on John McCain, on Lindsey Graham. They represent us too, and we really need to not have hope or expectations of anything from Trump.
Yeah,
Nothing.
Boy, what a great point.
He's not going to rise to any occasion. He is going to do exactly what he said. That man is all id and no superego. That's it. So.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, that New Yorker article that she's referring to, there is, and that gets to the point that what Trump and his cabal are doing is really dividing not just the Republican Party, but dividing the entire right side of our political spectrum. And the question of what Trump and Bannon want to do has to go through. If it costs money, it has to go through the U.S. House of Representatives, controlled by the agenda of which is controlled by Paul Ryan.
Right.
So there, she's absolutely right. There is something, there is a story there. The fact that Paul Ryan has not been outspoken as of yet, there is a story there that's going to be reported,
right.
I promise you. I just don't know exactly what it's going to be yet.
Strategically speaking, too, I believe there are 28 congressional districts with Republicans in them that Hillary Clinton won.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the strategies is to focus on that. I don't remember which organization is pointing that out, but to really pressure them to switch their votes, to ditch the Hastert rule and vote along with Democrats in there if they want to get reelected. And if not, maybe they won't be reelected. You know, that is one strategy that's out there. There are a number of other strategies, but we're getting to the top of the hour and we're going to have to wrap this up.
One last point.
Sure.
We have elections coming up in 2018. If you are not registered to vote, register to vote. If you know people in red states who are not registered to vote, but they're kind of on our side, encourage them to register to vote. Help them register to vote. Tell them where to go vote. And tell them that in 2018 they have to go vote.
Oh, you can say that. I can't. So, anyways, we're closing out. We will have you on maybe in a couple of months to see where we're at.
I'm game. Anytime. Right. You call me, I'll be here.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much, Chuck Rogers and Michael. Thank you very much. This was a harder one to engineer than normal. And I really want to thank, and we had some great callers. And we will be back on this topic. I've got some other things coming up for the next show, but maybe in April we'll talk about coming back up just before the tax day demonstrations. And I really appreciate it. And thank you and good night.
You've been listening to Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Thank you to Eric Kirk and Chuck Rogers and to our many callers this evening. We love to get the feedback on our programs. Please email ThursdayNightTalk@KHSU.org and like our Facebook page, Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Coming up next week on Thursday Night Talk is another episode of The Race Beat with Lorna Bryan. Lorna will be speaking with people who identify as multiracial and parents with multiracial children. They will share their experiences, and there is nothing black and white about it. Thanks to KHSU Thursday Night Talk producer Geraldine Goldberg. Our theme music is composed and performed by Jeff Kreider.